Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Senator Harris and Joe Biden officially kick off their campaign together. Kamala comes together with Joe Biden, and I think we have an opportunity to win this election. We go into exactly why and a major takeaway, one huge takeaway that foreshadows their whole campaign. Before we get started, I want to thank those of you that help support us at charliekirk.com/support, charliekirk.com/support. Thank you guys so much for supporting our program. Thank you for getting behind us. I encourage you guys to go to charliekirk.com for all the latest happenings of this podcast and stay subscribed. We have the battle plan and the pathway forward to defeat the radical Democrats, to keep America away from cultural arson so that we can make our country stable, safe, and free for future generations. Biden and Harris start their campaign. We have the analysis and insight that no one else has. You don't want to miss it. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Senator Harris and Joe Biden kicked off their campaign officially in a very awkward and socially distanced pair of announcements. Now, if you missed this event, you had a great day. I sat and watched this where it's a very bizarre kind of entrance. You have Senator Harris and former Vice President Joe Biden coming in. They're wearing masks, which of course I'm guessing they both were tested before this ceremony. So them wearing masks is just nothing more than symbolic. They walk in together. And Joe Biden goes to the podium, and he seemed somewhat sentient, actually, during his speech. And I've been told by people that deal in neurology, there are good days and there are bad days, and there are not so good days and really bad days. So I watched it so you didn't have to. And so look, there actually was a lot telling from the speech. There are some really big takeaways. We're going to get into that and so much more throughout this episode. But first of all, as I mentioned, anyone who has dealt with a loved one or an elderly friend who has been suffering from dementia or cognitive decline, they'll tell you that sometimes people like Joe Biden will have great days and sometimes not so great days. Well, it seemed like today was actually one of the good days. And he had plenty of time to practice in his basement, mind you, exactly how he was going to introduce Senator Harris, exactly to have his little pocket square all figured out. I mean, this is the only thing he has to do all day long. Just at the recording of this podcast, I have flown thousands of miles across the country, done a fundraiser, had a couple meetings, did two podcasts, radio interview, possibly a TV interview later, have to fly back again, get up at 6 a.m. the next morning and do it all over again. But look, for the most part, his speech seemed fairly orderly and coherent. Now, look, I do want to say, I hope that the potential opposition doesn't actually have mental issues. Now, the fact that it's noteworthy shouldn't be cause for celebration. It should be cause for concern that mental health and the health of his cognitive capacity is actually an issue of this race should be concerning to everybody. So just because his actual speech was coherent, though, doesn't mean his ideas were any less awful, anti-American, or untrue as they normally are. So first, he got through the niceties of how Senator Harris is a byproduct of the American dream, how she worked up her way as a, quote, brown girl in America. So just let's stop here. I think that's so derogatory just to call someone a brown girl. I mean, we're supposed to not be a racist country, right? And former Vice President Biden calls her a brown girl in America. How about qualified girl or smart girl? I mean, if I was Senator Harris, I'd be so tired of being called some by just your skin color. But she knows that it's her skin color that actually she has used as one of her main competitive advantage points. But once former Vice President was done with all of that, he went into this very hard-to-follow diatribe, even raising his voice, exerting likely a month's worth of energy in that one shout about how President Trump's executive order to pause payroll taxes is like cutting Social Security. Play tape.
He's issuing executive orders and making promises that in the end will defund the Social Security system while insisting that this virus will disappear.
So let's just be clear here. This is not a cut at all to Social Security. It's relief to Americans who need it the most, many of whom will never even see Social Security. And it's also interesting to accuse President Trump of, quote, cutting Social Security, considering Joe Biden actually stood on the floor of the Senate in the 1980s saying exactly that. Play tape.
When I argued that we should freeze federal spending, I meant Social Security as well. I meant Medicare and Medicaid. I meant veterans benefits. I meant every single solitary thing in the government. And I not only tried it once, I tried it twice, I tried it a third time, and I tried it a fourth time. I'm one of those Democrats who voted for the constitutional amendment to balance the budget. I have introduced on four occasions, entire plans to balance the budget, knowing I'm not president and I'm not the leader, but for illustrative purposes. I tried with Senator Grassley back in the 80s to freeze all government spending, including Social Security, including everything.
And even as recently as 2011, Joe Biden was on record saying a payroll tax cut will create jobs and, quote, have no financial impact on Social Security. So which is it, Joe Biden? A new poll points to the direction that Americans want to see this campaign against Joe and Kamala go. A YouGov poll asked, do you approve or disapprove of the executive order President Trump signed on Saturday, which says he'll extend unemployment benefits and defer payroll taxes? 55% approve, 27% disapprove. Now, let me just be very clear. I'm a huge supporter of the president. I do not like executive orders ruling by fiat when Congress does not work. I don't like it. However, I think this is brilliant politically what the president did. I don't like the precedent that it sets. I understand constitutionally the argument that he made. Maybe it will stand up in court, maybe not. I talked to a very high-ranking judge about this, and he thinks it's not going to stand up. However, he thinks that it will not be shot down at the first hearing, and that it will probably go to some appeals court, and eventually these executive orders will be reversed. So I think the president is on the right side of that issue. Politically, I don't love it constitutionally. I just don't. I don't like it. Presidents ruling by executive order. But if you read the actual language of the executive order, you could see that the White House counsel was very careful of where they were going to arrange the money and reallocate the money. However, my position is trying to narrow down the amount of executive authority there is for one potential socialist president who might one day abuse it. Now, before we get more into Senator Kamala Harris and Joe Biden and the executive order, I just want to compliment the president on his terrific press conference. This came right after the Harris-Biden, which just sounds so bad, Biden-Harris. I can't quite put my finger on what it sounds like, but I'm going to mention it in a podcast as soon as I kind of hit it. It kind of sounds like a defunct 1970s one-hit wonder band, Biden-Harris or something, that there was that one song you might remember once on the radio and it just disappeared. Maybe that, or maybe it just sounds like a really bad appetizer that you would order at some sort of French restaurant. However, Biden Harris. It just doesn't really come off the tongue. Biden Harris. Harris Biden. Anyway, I will say this. President Trump's press conference was one of his best. He argued for school choice for all Americans, while Joe Biden and Senator Harris attacked President Trump baselessly on the topic of education. Play tape.
I would like the money to follow the student, and this way you can make your own choice.
The president also advocated for the reopening of schools and the return of college football. Play tape.
I spoke to some of the great football players, college players, Trevor, and a lot of great players called Coach O. A lot of fantastic people I got to speak to, athletes, leaders. They want to play football. Let them play. Let them play. And they feel safer in the field than they do walking around and doing nothing.
President Trump's political strategy these last 2 weeks have been terrific. He has been focusing on a return to college athletics. He's been talking about kids going back to schools. And he's been putting the left on defense. He even said, quote, the brain starts to wither away if there is no school. This is a winning issue for suburban moms. There's so much data to show that in the summer, kids' cognitive capacity actually goes down. And President Trump said this, and I agree completely. Learning from a laptop is not great. Boy, is that a great statement from President Trump. I love it. I get just seeing him say it just kind of gave me a chuckle. It's just so perfect politically. So now Senator Harris had her time to shine. She came up and she just looked like Hillary Clinton. She was wearing a pantsuit. She was cackling. She looked so inauthentic. Again, I said in a previous episode, she is younger, diverse Hillary. She is a political social climber. She is a Marxist. She's an angry, bitter woman. She is not someone that I consider to be a nice and gentle human being. It's almost like Elizabeth Warren and Hillary Clinton kind of combined into somebody, decided to go into a career in law. That is Senator Harris. Senator Harris, I always feel like I'm being scolded by the librarian whenever she's talking, as if she's giving some long, drawn-out speech as to, let me kind of tell you how things are supposed to be, you know? Because if you don't listen to me, then, and that book has a late fine, I'm going to go talk to your parents and I'm going to lock you up in prison for the rest of your life. And so Senator Harris had many opportunities in this speech to try to introduce herself as a more mainstream and moderate selection for former Vice President Joe Biden. She did anything but that. You see, Kamala Harris decided to go after President Trump immediately and instantaneously on the issue of economic recovery. This is a losing message for former Vice President Biden's campaign. It segues beautifully to a Breitbart.com piece that says this. The nonpartisan website, GovTrack.us, website rated Senator Kamala Harris, Democrat from California, the most left-wing member of the United States Senate in 2019, further left than Democrat socialist Bernie Sanders. Pregnant pause for intentional effect. I want to say that again. The nonpartisan GovTrack.us website rated Senator Kamala Harris the most left-wing member of the U.S. Senate in 2019, further left than Democrat socialist Bernie Sanders. So the Trump campaign should run this on billboards, radio, and TV every single day. Senator Harris is the most liberal individual in the United States Senate. Now, this has a two-pronged political strategy impact. Number one, it's going to make Senator Harris either agree or disagree with this statement. If she agrees with the statement, well, then all of a sudden she totally agrees that she's the most liberal person. Now, if she disagrees, there will be even more base decay amongst the progressive left-wing base. So Senator Harris had this opportunity to be able to introduce herself to the American people. She did so, I think, very robotically, almost like Hillary Clinton would. In her all-blue navy pantsuit, she decided to almost incite racial disunity. She talked about BLM Incorporated, and she said she got her start in politics in a stroller in the civil rights era. So Senator Harris is now going to become the focus of this campaign. You see, former Vice President Biden has just handed those of us that want a decent, stable, and prosperous America, handed us a beautiful gift. This entire race is now going to center around the senator from California. She is going to have to justify and explain to the voters of Wisconsin why they should vote for the most liberal senator in the entire U.S. Senate. She's going to have to justify and explain all of the radical Marxist ideas that she embodies. Here's a good question for you. Who in the United States Senate championed and co-sponsored Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's Green New Deal? Senator Kamala Harris did. Who supports Medicare for All, a complete and total federal government takeover of our medicine? Senator Kamala Harris. Who supports dramatic cuts to the United States military? Senator Kamala Harris. All of the kind of fake moderate position that Joe Biden was able to very carefully tailor over the last couple weeks, Senator Kamala Harris blows all of that up. Now, Joe Biden was leading in a lot of these polls throughout the summer because, believe it or not, the states that determine the presidency are center-right states. The states that determine the presidency are states that lean right. They are states that are gun-loving, church-attending, morally centered states. It's not California. It's not Connecticut. It's not New Jersey. Joe Biden was at his best when he was able to position himself and paint himself as the more moderate centrist candidate. Now we're going to start to see some warning signs for the Biden campaign. Instead of trying to move more to the middle, like most campaigns would, he chose someone that is going to alienate the moderate population of these states like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Ohio, and Iowa. And also, it really doesn't get much base benefit. And this is a very important point. The progressive, radical Bernie Sanders base of the Democrat Party cannot stand Senator Harris. Do you know that Senator Harris, at her very peak in California, in the Democrat primary, her home state of California, was at 7%? That's right, 7%. Now, just right now, a new CNBC Change Research poll in Wisconsin has Donald Trump doing better in this poll than he did right before he won the state of Wisconsin in 2016. Had Joe Biden up 4 points, but a similar poll back in 2016 had Hillary Clinton up 6 points. So this race, in a lot of different ways, is now going to be a referendum on the ideologies that both tickets represent. So if I were to try to give Joe Biden the benefit of the doubt, if I was trying to put on a hat and try to think what they were thinking, which is kind of something I'm less than, let's say, qualified to do at times, but I think very carefully and analytically and spend hours of research over this. I think that Joe Biden realized that he had a very serious problem amongst the Democrat base. I think Joe Biden recognized that amongst the Democrat base, he was unable to generate any sort of enthusiasm, especially amongst minority voters and women voters. So Joe Biden decided to nominate someone who thought that the rape accusations and sexual assault accusations against him was credible, which Senator Harris once said. She said she believed Tara Reid because she once said we should believe all women. Additionally, Joe Biden decided to have someone who went after him for busing children for the segregationist conversation that happened last summer. Let's play a tape so that you can remember this from last summer. Play tape.
It was hurtful to hear you talk about the reputations of two United States senators who built their reputations and career on the segregation of race in this country. And it was not only that, but you also worked with them to oppose busing. And, you know, there was a little girl in California who was part of the second class to integrate her public schools. And she was bused to school every day. And that little girl was me.
So Joe Biden, who was very carefully navigating the center lane of the American political discourse, despite the entire base of the Democrat Party being infiltrated by radical anti-American Marxists of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar and so many others. Despite all of that, we are now seeing this entire race become infiltrated by the most left-wing voices imaginable, literally the most left-wing senator in the United States Senate. So Senator Harris also said that Trump inherited a roaring economy. Play tape.
Inherited the longest economic expansion in history from Barack Obama and Joe Biden. And then, like everything else he inherited, he ran it straight into the ground.
This is not even close to being true. Obama oversaw the most anemic recovery in the entire 20th century. Senator Harris then pointed to the Ebola crisis, saying that Obama did such a great job with Ebola and only two people died. Only two people died, she said. Play tape.
6 years ago, in fact, we had a different health crisis. It was called Ebola. And we all remember that pandemic. But you know what happened then? Barack Obama and Joe Biden did their job. Only two people in the United States died. Two. That is what's called leadership. But compare that to the moment we find ourselves in now.
Now, out of everything that Senator Harris said, and I try to keep my decibel level very much in control. This is the one that I got the most upset about. Why? Because I actually know what Ebola is. She is so immoral, so dishonest, she uses something that sounds really bad. Ebola. Do you know how you get Ebola? According to WebMD, which allegedly has more traffic than ever before in the last 4 months. Go figure. WebMD, because everyone thinks that they're sick all the time. We've created a country of hypochondriacs. This is what it says. It's a virus that causes severe bleeding, organ failure, and can cause the death. Okay, stop with that. Sounds bad, right? How do you get it? Humans may spread the virus to other humans through contact with bodily fluids such as blood. It's incredibly hard to spread Ebola. It's really, really hard to spread Ebola, okay? That's one of the easier pandemics to be able to control. So it is very rare, very deadly, but it's also very easy to control versus something that you don't know who's carrying it. It's a pathogen in the air, and it spreads quicker than any of us could have realized. So she tries to use this false moral governing equivalency between Barack Obama and Donald Trump. This is pure political malpractice. Now, mind you, Senator Harris did not mention H1N1 at all. Senator Harris did not mention the swine flu. So at the beginning of the episode, I mentioned that we learned a lot from this press conference. Do you know what the number one thing that I learned from this entire press conference of Senator Harris and Joe Biden? They are going to make the virus a top-tier issue of their campaign. Most of their commentary, most of their one-liners, and most of their focus was all on the president's response to the pandemic. If the president is able to demonstrate by September 1st post-convention success of breaking America out of the state of fear on the virus, the president will win this election. They had a little bit on economic anxiety, but that message falls flat. A little bit on Trump cutting Social Security, we already debunked that. They taught a little bit on racial disunity and discord, of which we talked about, but they think they are going to win the White House on the issue of the virus. They think they can create an entire public referendum campaign on the virus. Now, Joe Biden, interestingly, said that politics has always been a family affair for him. Play tape.
My campaign has always been a family affair, every campaign I've run. So I've got some news for you. You're all honorary Bidens.
What a beautiful opportunity for us to be able to talk about his son, Hunter Biden. Now, Joe Biden talks about his son quite a lot. Beau Biden. May Beau Biden rest in peace. Sorry he passed away. And so it's interesting how Joe Biden doesn't mention his other son, Hunter Biden. That he doesn't mention Hunter Biden and the money that he laundered from the Chinese Communist Party state-sanctioned banks. Let's talk about James Biden. Joe Biden's younger brother, who has made millions of dollars through federal government contracts rebuilding Iraq. Hunter Biden, we talked about, serving in foreign boards in Ukraine, involved in connected business dealings with oligarchs in Kazakhstan, involved in all sorts of different international business deals. Or how about Frank Biden? In late 2009, former Vice President Biden landed in Costa Rica aboard Air Force Two and went to the Costa Rican presidential palace for a one-on-one with President Oscar Arias. The Biden visit had symbolic significance. I'm reading from the NewYorkPost.com, NYPost.com. The last time a high-ranking American official had visited the company was back in 1997 when Bill Clinton had come. But there's more to the story. His brother, Frank Biden, he had a dream to build casinos, a world-class golf course, and an anti-aging center in Costa Rica. And it happened that Joe Biden had been asked by President Obama to ask as the administration's point man in Latin America and the Caribbean. Isn't that helpful? Well, interestingly enough, the Costa Rican Ministry of Public Education signed a letter of intent with Frank's company for how much? $6.5 million, called the Caribbean Energy Security Initiative. Yes, politics is a family affair for the Bidens. No matter what it is, for Joe Biden and his family, they use their political connections and their proximity to get rich at the expense of the American people. And this is par for the course for the entire Democrat Party, to try to enrich themselves at every turn, their family members, and their public policy decisions, so that they are able to get rich while the rest of the American middle class is struggling to get by. The biggest takeaway is how lackluster their messaging and their strategy is heading into the election. Their argument is basically this: we are not Donald Trump. Vote for us. Thank you. Goodbye. That is their reelection campaign strategy. If President Trump can get people excited, if President Trump can continue to make a compelling argument to the American people as to the Think Big, Dream Big platform, that we are a tough nation, the Harris-Biden duo can be defeated and will be defeated at the ballot box. Their inauthenticity, their lack of mental stability, and their corruption are winning issues for the president to continue to zero in on. We are going to have an entire update on college football, but very quickly, I want to play a tape from Jerry Jones, owner of the Dallas Cowboys, who said his team intends to play their home games in front of their fans. Play tape.
The NFL can be an exciting, when I say exciting, it can be an inspirational part of how we address COVID, not only the remainder of this year, but as we go into 21. So it's a big enough deal for me to look at costs in every way. And obviously costs usually are associated with financial. But it's easy for me to justify for the long term of interest in football and the long term thing that competitive sports bring to the table and what it can bring to the country. It's worth it to make the effort for us to have a complete season. And I want to do it in front of our fans.
This is the right move, especially considering the Cowboys being America's team. And now, a follow-up from yesterday's episode. The SEC and the ACC also announced since yesterday's episode that they, unlike the cowardly anti-science Big Ten and Pac-12, would be playing college football this season. And Lou Holtz, the great Lou Holtz, said it best on Fox News with Bill Hemmer yesterday. And I just loved this segment. Play tape.
What do you think, Coach? Is that the right call?
Well, it's not really difficult decision for him. Two of the presidents happen to be MDs, and MDs are not great leaders. They only look at it from one side. Players want to play. Coaches want to coach. Athletic directors want to play. They need the money. However, the presidents have no responsibility. They have no other concern. It's easy to say, no, we aren't going to play. That is lack of leadership. You have to look at the whole process along the line. For example, Clemson, many months ago, had a rash of COVID-19 positive. They've had one in the last month. I think that you can, 1,000 to 1, Bill, the Pac-12 will go along with the Big Ten. They're tied waist to waist. They have been ever since 46 when they made the Rose Bowl agreement with the Big Ten. So I just think it showed no leadership.
So Coach, you're saying, sorry, if I hear you right, you're saying they should play.
I think they should play, but then again, that's my thing. I think that you ought to say to the players, you want to play if you have a problem, if you have an asthma problem, if you're diabetic or something, and you have a legitimate reason you don't want to play, absolutely, don't play. The rest of you want to play, let's go play.
The bottom line is let the kids play. America needs it. College football and football in general is essential. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. freedom@charliekirk.com. Type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider. Hit subscribe. Give us a 5-star review. Screenshot you doing it and email it to us at freedom@charliekirk.com. freedom@charliekirk.com. Senator Harris thinks that she is going to have ultimate power very soon. If we rise up as conservatives and do something about it, we can keep this republic free, fair, and stable, and out of the hands of bitter anti-American Marxists that want to see America burn down to the ground. When you support us at charliekirk.com/support, you allow us to educate millions of people in all the battleground states and all the states across the country at charliekirk.com/support to enlighten people about the ideas of a free society, a fair country under the rule of law, the Constitutional Republic at charliekirk.com/support. Email us your questions anytime and your feedback, freedom@charliekirk.com. We've got to win this election, folks. We got the coverage here. Make sure you stay subscribed. Listen every day. We got you informed. Email us, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much. God bless.